You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Guidepost again. It's just Tony here as your host today. Special guest joining us from Georgia. Guy that I met a couple of years ago, super passionate conservationist, fly shop owner, conservation advocacy organizer and leader down in Georgia, and, you know, super helpful ally in this fight to make sure redfish are around for the next couple of generations. So, Jared, why don't you kind of introduce yourself to the audience and let everyone know what's going on down in Georgia.
Hey, Tony. Thank you. Appreciate you having me on in such short notice. We have a big issue ahead of us yet again. We've been dealing with redfish conservation issues here for the past 6+ years. But 6 years officially as Georgia Saltwater Anglers Association. I'm the vice president of Georgia Saltwater Anglers Association to help lead the charge. With Chad DeBose out of Savannah, who's the president of Georgia Saltwater Anglers Association, and the rest of our board, plus hundreds of anglers and captains along the Georgia coast that are concerned about our fishery. Right now, there's a public comment period that ends June 30th, and basically our call to action is Georgia's redfish fishery is being sacrificed right in front of us. And most anglers don't even have any idea that it's happening. And that's our biggest challenge, is just to let anglers and captains understand how we got to the point we're at now. And that, because it's a little bit confusing, because a lot of folks are like, well, DNR Coastal Resource Division is now proposing new regulation changes for the first time in over 30 years. And they're saying, well, we're moving the needle in the right direction. But what I wanted to kind of jump on today with you is to explain, yes, they are proposing moving from 5 redfish per person per day, which is the current Georgia creel limit, to 3 redfish per person per day. So they are moving the needle in a good direction if you were to look at that, you know, at a quick glance. And they're moving the slot up 1 inch. So it's 14 to 23 inches right now, believe it or not, when other states are at 16 and 17 inch on the bottom limit. We're 14 to 23. They're proposing going 15 inches, so moving the slot up 1 inch to 24 inches. So the changes we're seeing now are the bare minimum. If you were to kind of be a part of the meetings that have happened the past 6 years along the Georgia coast and with DNR's Coastal Resource Division, I mean, back in 2021, we had 2 redfish town halls. We had 2 redfish panel discussions. We had an open comment survey at that point 5 years ago. And Coastal Resource Division went as far as proposing and estimating and calculating, if we change the slot 1 inch this way, what's our recovery rate? If we change the slot 1 inch this way, what's our recovery rate? If we change the creel limit, if we do a captain's no-take provision, if we do a vessel cap, all these calculations were done in a work session in 2021. And now, after 5 years later, they're only proposing the bare minimum, when our neighboring states are making much more drastic regulation changes because they see the dire position we're in right now. And to understand all of this, I mean, I think, Tony, we need to back up a little bit more. In 2021, when they proposed those regulation changes, why weren't they put into place? Well, as that kind of spread out into 2022, the public statement was, we're going to wait for the ASMFC stock assessment to come out in 2024. So the stall tactic of a couple years to wait for the stock assessment But what we found out was when the stock assessment came out, they deemed the southern states, our fishery, overfished and still currently experiencing overfishing, which are the two worst results you can have from the stock assessment. And neighboring states basically jumped in and said, well, this is pretty serious. We're going to make some regulation changes. And keep in mind, states like Florida have been doing changes all along, while Georgia hasn't made a change in over 30 years. So we're kind of the fat kid at the table here, for lack of a better term. And because we've dragged our feet and kicked the can down the road, now we're in a much more drastic position of if ASMFC says we need to recover by X percentage, and all of their calculations they presented cannot achieve that goal, you're at risk of going into a moratorium and a catch and release fishery only for redfish, which is not what Georgia Saltwater Anglers Association wants, not what our advocacy group and conservation focused anglers want. We want to still keep fish. We want to manage the fishery in a way that it's sustainable. And right now, Georgia's the only state that has regulations in place that is not sustainable given the current circumstances, and it hasn't been sustainable for years.
So, Jared, you know, we've been kind of paddling in the right direction, Guides Association and GSSA, for a while, and, you know, partnered on a lot of advocacy stuff for redfish in Georgia, stayed in constant communications throughout all of this mess. And I'm just going to go over some pretty, from a real high level, you know, the headwinds that we faced. In no order of importance, I'm just spitballing here off of memory. So when y'all started this, almost immediately there were a couple of state legislators who said, if you change this, we're going to put a bill in play in the Georgia State House to remove regulatory authority from Georgia DNR, and everything has to go through the legislature. So that was the first threat, right? So then you're like, this is insanity, you know? So then we fight, and we're at the ASMFC meeting a while back, and their answer is to lower the escapement rate from, 40% to 30%.
Lower the spawning potential.
Spawning potential ratio, just for the crowd, is, 100% spawning potential ratio would be an unfished virgin stock. So what they're looking at is, 40% of that, and we've managed redfish on the East Coast by that number since like 2002, right? So that's why it held on for so long. That's why your regulations haven't changed in 30 years. But when you have more anglers, more pressure, better equipment, better sonar, all this kind of stuff, then maybe, you have to make some changes to maintain that 40% spawning potential ratio. And instead of making the hard changes, their decision was to lower it to 30%, so they didn't have to, you can't meet the water quality standards, so you lower the standard and you tell everyone the water's fine. That's right. Kind of how I explain it to people. So we fight tooth and nail on that. So we fight tooth and nail not to get that removed. And lo and behold, South Carolina holds strong, doesn't want to change it, understands the economic value of a good redfish population. But then Georgia and Florida want to change it. So this is kind of the funniest part of all of this. Georgia and Florida want to change it. And they get allegedly, just to cover my butt, but I had people in the room texting me saying, hey, at the ASMFC meeting, saying, hey, there's southern states bragging about trading Menhaden votes. Because if y'all remember, we were supposed to have a 50% reduction based on the new stock assessment for Menhaden. And oddly enough, Georgia and Florida voted against that. And they traded with Virginia, allegedly, and the Potomac Rivers Fisheries Commission, allegedly, those redfish and Menhaden votes, allegedly. Even though I had people texting me from the happy hour at ASMFC saying, holy moly, they're bragging about this right now. So that was a little disturbing. But then here's the funny part. Florida, being Florida, says, our science is better than yours. We're not really taking a reduction. Yeah, we're already at one fish. Leave us alone. And then that put, because it's a regionally managed fish, that put the spotlight back on Georgia, and now they have to take a much more substantial reduction than they would have if Florida had taken that reduction. So it's kind of like, yeah, you threw your chips in with the devil, you traded those boats, you thought you were going to get out of it, and then Florida crawfishes on you, and you have to take a pretty decent reduction anyway. Because, you know, Jared, it would have been four fish, easy, if Florida had contributed, right? It's not funny, but it is a little funny because they got kind of screwed by the state that was like, come along with us. Well, we're not going to do any of this, and we'll trade our votes for that. There is a little irony in it. And did I miss anything? Like, it's been a mess.
No, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head, and either there's a lot of different tactics happening, and it's not just our fishery, it's every fishery, but there's a lot of tactics happening behind the scenes to help them achieve their goal, whatever their goal is internally, right? Not the official goal, but their goal. What we've seen over the past 6 years is DNR Coastal Resource Division doesn't want to move the needle aggressively. They don't want to make a big enough change because In our opinion, in 6 years of going to meetings and taking surveys and participating in public comments, talking with legislators, there is a political pressure being put on them. We can say that confidently. And we even have private conversations confirming that. That's why they don't want to make drastic changes. And the legislators say, well, it's our constituents don't want change. And you go round and round you go, and as you can see, it delays to a point where we're 6 years later. We're going into our sixth year here as an official organization fighting for conservation and a more sustainable redfish fishery. But what's even worse, you know, you mentioned allegedly trading votes. I mean, the votes were where they were, right? The Florida and Georgia voted on the Menhaden issue. And if you were to look on paper, and Virginia and the Potomac River voted to lower the spawning potential ratio in the southern states. But to get to that desperate point, they had to be backed into a corner. And one thing you left out, Tony, was before they changed spawning potential ratio, it was put out to an open comment or a survey, and 187-1 were in opposition of lowering the spawning potential ratio from 40% to 30%, lowering the target for health of our fishery. Since the early 90s, we've been using the spawning potential ratio at 40% target to say this is the target we need to rebound to so that we have a buffer of 10% before we reach the 30% spawning potential ratio threshold. And that threshold, once you lower your spawning potential ratio in a fishery to 30% or less, you are overfished, period, the end, right? And previously, since the early 90s, when you were to drop below 40% spawning potential ratio, you are overfishing. You're not overfished yet, but you're overfishing. Warning period, once you reach 30%, you're overfished. We need to do something, change regulations. We need to do something to make this fishery rebound and be healthy. The current position we're in now, we can't even estimate it because the charts don't go out to the current day. But the last charts we had ended in 2022, and we were about 16 to 18% spawning potential ratio. That's more than dire. That's way below the 30% that declares you overfished. So we're extremely overfished. And 187 votes to one saying, don't change that health target. We want you to rebound to that target. So that speaks volumes. It backed them into a corner and they said, oh, shoot, how are we going to get past this? And in the meeting publicly, they stated, well, we're going to throw out those votes basically because we feel the public didn't. This is too complicated of a technical term, spawning potential ratio. People don't understand it. I don't know that people knew what they were voting for.
At the ASMFC meeting, the Georgia rep from DNR actually said people don't know what they were commenting on, which right. sent me into a little bit of a tizzy because I thought about all the hours that you and I spent educating people over the last 6 years. And you know what? Maybe 7 years ago, anglers didn't know what spawning potential ratio was, but they sure as hell do now. Just like striper anglers know what conservation equivalency is. And like, by the way, Georgia DNR, you're welcome. You're welcome for two groups who care about conservation, educating anglers and trying to make them professional science-based decisions and understanding complicated issues because it's not easy. And frankly, you've done a terrible job at it, Georgia DNR. We did a good job at it. And in return, we got, well, they don't know what they're commenting on, which almost made my head explode. When I heard, I've heard a lot, and that one was high up there.
Meeting when Doug Heyman stated that, you know, is his opinion, basically, that the public didn't understand what they were voting on. And I was furious, especially since Georgia Saltwater Anglers Association had made 16 posts during that month-long campaign. We filmed 6 educational videos. We put out thousands of emails. We used paid advertising on social media to ensure that people were informed and educated on the issue and understood what spawning potential ratio was. Because yes, these are complicated issues to put into layman's terms. But I feel like we did it extremely well. And every captain and recreational angler that we speak to still to this day at our meetups and our advocacy talks, they understand, they are explaining spawning potential ratio back to me. They understand it so well.
So Jared, I was on a South Atlantic Council call last week before, and they actually had, it was a very well done presentation. They invested money, sent their council members around, did outreach on why don't more people comment on our stuff. And I'm glad they did that. But when I'm listening to the council meeting, I'm sitting there and I'm like, man, I should raise my hand. And I should say, I could tell you why. Because when groups like ours educate people, generate comments, and they're completely ignored, 187 to 1. And then our people go to a public hearing, and this happened in more places than Georgia, and mysteriously the equipment doesn't work. Or they let a couple of chuckleheads talk for 30 minutes, and then they say, we're out of time.
Right.
Where do they plan the meeting? In the middle of nowhere, at 5 o'clock on a Tuesday, when our guys are either getting off the water or getting home and they got it to help take care of their kids or fix dinner. But no, they don't do all that. And they get in their trucks and they drive an hour, probably through some crummy traffic, sit in a room, listen to a presentation they've heard 50 times, and then get told, and then watch a bunch of people who are uninformed, fools, who right. sit down and give their resume and their life family history, but don't say anything other than, I like to eat redfish. And then
anecdotes. Yeah, exactly.
And then they let them go on and on and on. And then they tell the professional, calm people who spent hours understanding this that there's no time to comment.
Exactly. I was in that meeting.
Jared, I would just say that is a pretty high, pretty prominent reason why people have just given up and they don't comment. Because they're screaming from a steeple, like, we don't care. This is a show. We're just pretending we're not going to listen to you. Mm-hmm. And like, and then they're like, gee, I wonder why nobody comments. You're like, well,
we were in Shellman Bluff, which is a lot of captains and anglers took time away from family, second jobs, third jobs to be there. We had over 30 anglers total in this small hall, ready and prepared, because it was told to us that this is the meeting where you provide your public comment. This was Georgia's opportunity to speak up in person on record. And as that meeting went on, we were sitting in the audience saying, when is the public record point of this meeting? When are we allowed to speak up and be on record? And it just went to questions. And then a number of us, including myself, reached out to Doug Hammond and said, at what point in this meeting, because, you know, they play by their own rules and we're trying to understand the rules, do you take our record, our voice on record? Well, and then his answer was, I guess now. So there was no formal block of time for the record. We had, again, over 30 anglers that wanted to be on record. We only had time for two or three to speak because, like you said, the time was monopolized by those in opposition of any change. And a quick point I want to make about that is one thing I've noticed throughout the past 6 years of discussion. The many that are opposed to stronger conservation measures rely on these personal anecdotes. And you've heard it, Tony. I catch plenty of fish. I've never seen more redfish. There's no increase in fishing pressure. People pushing for change don't know how to fish. That's my favorite one. And the important thing to understand is those aren't facts. Those are opinions. While the other side, our side, is looking at ASMFC stock assessments, decades of fisheries data, annual scientific studies, population growth, like you said, increased technology, sonar side scan, which is increasing the success of anglers catching fish while we're increasing the number of people fishing for these fish, right? There's no doubt. No one can argue that there's increased fishing pressure. The population's increasing exponentially. It has been. The biggest hit for us was the global pandemic. And when COVID came in, I mean, our boat yards were empty. Everyone bought a boat, moved away from the cities, came to the coast, and they were fishing our fishery. And we base it on facts. We base it on data from professional fishery scientists. That's where our opinion comes from. We want a healthy fishery. And when you have responsible regulations put into place, what the opposition with the anecdotes don't understand, saying that we just don't know how to fish and I've never seen more redfish, which is their opinion on where they fish. I'm sure it's their opinion. But the changes that we want to put into place help them too. They help them and they help us. It helps everybody. We have more fish, we'll have larger fish, and everyone will continue to be able to keep redfish. We're on the same side. People that don't want change for the sake of not wanting change has been a constant barrier for us. And unfortunately, these are the constituents that the representatives, the legislators are referencing, saying why we are not making more drastic regulation changes.
Georgia, obviously our message gets out through your organization, but other people, you know, a lot of people from around the country are going to be listening to this. So I just wanted to show how ridiculous this is, because y'all have different species than people in the Mid-Atlantic, in the Northeast, or the Gulf. I'm going to read down a list of what one angler can keep in Georgia in one day.
Yeah.
So here's just a smattering, and I may have missed something. So if you're an inshore angler, right now you can keep 5 redfish, you can keep 15 trout, spotted sea trout, 15 flounder, 15 sheep's head, 15 black drum, 15 Spanish mackerel. Two triple tail, one cobia, 3 kings, and you can even kill a tarpon if you want. One fish, even though catch and release is strongly encouraged. minimum size of 68 inches. So these people that say that they're subsistence fishermen and they'll die without being able to keep five redfish can stand on a pier, on the shoreline. They don't need an expensive boat or anything. 15 trout, 15 flounder, 15 sheephead, 15 black drum, 15 Spanish. So that is...
And come back tomorrow and do it again.
Right. So that's 30, 45, 60, 75 fish. What we're looking at here is the difference between you can keep 78 fish with the new redfish regulations or 80 if you keep the old. I sincerely hope that we aren't going to make people starve to death, Jared. I actually, looking at these numbers, I take it all back. The redfish limit should be 10 per person, and you should be able to catch three limits a day, because I don't know how people in Georgia are going to be able to survive anymore only keeping 78 fish a day instead of 80. I think we made a tragic mistake, Jared. For calling you out on your chicanery, we see the light now. So, I mean, how ridiculous is that?
It's gluttony at its finest. And what's unfortunate is a lot of the anglers that are in opposition, their badge of honor is to say, I limited out. So no matter what DNR Coastal Resource Division puts as a limit, their success, their measure of success is limiting out, getting the full limit each day, right? Whereas we're saying, yeah, tweak that. We still like eating fish too, but why keep the full limit if you don't need to? Why not release those, let them grow? These fish aren't growing larger in your freezer. It's a harvest. So why not keep them in their environment so that they can continue to populate the stock? It's like a gardening equivalent, right? You need to make sure that you're taking care of the environment, that you're taking care of the species of fish in there. And for us, I want to keep something, but I'm going to keep something in my own slot limit. I'm going to keep it between 17 inches and 24 inches. Personally, I feel like anything under 17 inches is too small of a fish to even fillet.
Jared, I forgot three species that you could catch from a shore. I forgot ling, whiting, whatever you want to call them. Right. Sea mullet. There's a million different names for it. I would call it a whiting. You keep 25 of them. You keep 25 croaker. You keep 25 spot. So we can add another 75. So that's 155 fish versus 153 fish.
Yeah.
Which I think puts an exclamation point. I will start crafting our apology letter to Georgia and just say, you know what? Like, I don't think you guys should stop until you hit 200. I think you're on the right track. You should just...
We're going for a Guinness book.
Let's just go for 200 fish a day. And then I think you'll be in a good place.
We don't want
people to starve to death.
Right.
So my bad. I'm sorry. I forgot three important species for y'all down there. I don't know how people are making it. I think, like I said, I think we should go to 55 redfish a day. Or 45 redfish a day. That'll make an even 200. And then the eight people who are complaining about this can know that they can sink their boat.
Right.
If they have six people on a boat, that's 1,200 fish that they can take home.
Right.
So that's pretty awesome, versus 1,188
It's a big spotlight when you put it that way, Tony, is, redfish is our focus right now, but we have so much more ahead of us on the horizon for Georgia Saltwater Anglers Association to tackle. You just listed off a bunch of ridiculous limits, 15 fish per day for multiple species, 25 fish per day for, two or three species. It is ridiculous. When you see that how our neighbors are reacting, when you see South Carolina went to one fish per person after the ASMFC stock assessment came out, and a two fish boat limit. Two fish per boat. Now, Georgia's not even putting a vessel cap on the current proposal. They're saying we're moving from five fish to three fish only, and we're going to move the slot up. We're going to move it from 14 inches to 15 inches on the low end and 23 to 24 inches. I mean, could you describe a more bare minimum redfish regulation change given the state of things, given the current data, the facts that their fishery scientists have uncovered and have been tracking since the late 80s?
Your length of your coastline's only 100 miles.
One-third of the marshes on the eastern seaboard.
And you have crazy, crazy tides there. I don't know if people, understand that.
6 to 8 foot tide swings where we are with flushes.
6 to 8 foot tide swings. So you're talking like Cape Cod numbers. Yeah. Right. I mean, it's pretty wild. It's a pretty cool fishery. The reason why I'm bringing this up is like redfish really don't know boundaries. Are your redfish crossing the line between South Carolina and North Carolina?
They are.
How much mixing is occurring? We don't know what we don't know. The biggest problem I have with fisheries management at this point in my career and life is I feel like every single one of these stock assessment scientists should walk up to the microphone and say, this is all based on a model. There's a ton of uncertainty, and this is what we think we know, but I wouldn't push this to the limit. Because if you make a mistake, you're in trouble. And they're never precautionary. They say that they're trying to find a middle ground, and that's a lie. What they're trying to do is to get nobody to yell at them. And that's weak. And like, if you're a fisheries manager and you don't want to make hard decisions, open up an ice cream truck. Everyone will be happy when they see you. You'll probably get sick of the music, but like, everyone will be nice and happy when they buy a snow pop, whatever thing out of your truck, and you'll have a good day. Don't get into fisheries management. And I think what we see is, I'm not criticizing the stock assessment, but there are assumptions and uncertainties. And to go up and be like, this is it, this is ironclad, this is the, we know everything. Well, you look at the striped bass stock assessment, from 2022, it says, this statistical catch at age model that we use for striped bass, well, we underestimated fishing mortality and overestimated the SSB from anywhere from like 9 to 17%. And you're like, wait a minute, there's not a lot of stripers out there right now. You're telling me you overestimated it by up to 17 or 19%? Oh, geez, we're in trouble. Why didn't you say this when you were given the presentation to the Striped Bass Management Board? Why didn't you say it? I'll give you an example of Louisiana. So, Louisiana didn't do what we wanted them to do. They have a 30-something year rebuilding timeline, much like Georgia's going to have, instead of doing the right thing. And they had a five fish limit too that they needed to take away from. You can't kill big redfish anymore in Louisiana. That's going to help. But you know what happened, Jared? Louisiana got a foot of snow. Once in a 50-year thing. You should have seen our guys. Bailey's running around out there, with his flowing golden locks and a foot of snow south of New Orleans. And I'm like, man, he's never going to see that again. His dog was just standing there like, what do I do with this, Dad? I never seen this. What is this stuff?
Right.
Just having the time of her life. But you know what happened? A whole bunch of redfish died. And I've had conversations with LDWF and been like, boy, don't you wish you had gone to three fish? Because you'd be in a lot better place after this cold stun. And it's, hindsight may be 20/20, but you don't know what's going to happen next year or the year after that. Are you going to have bad spawns? You guys get a hard freeze. I mean, you know how many trout and redfish died in North Carolina? This year, they had to close down the trout fishery until June 1 because so many trout died, just to give them a chance to spawn. And it's like, the one thing that we are uncertain about is the future. So if you don't do the right thing, you are now extending this rebuilding timeline. And like, there is a reason why federally managed fisheries have to be rebuilt within 10 years or sooner, if possible. Right. You start messing around with 30 plus year rebuilding timelines. It's like, you know what I tell people? It's like that when you're like a week out from a hurricane. And it's that cone of uncertainty, and it covers half the coast. And then, like, when you're 24 hours away, you got a pretty good idea where it's going to hit. Okay. So, like, imagine a cone of uncertainty for 10 years, and imagine one for 35 years. Mm-hmm. And a 35-year one is just, you might as well put a blindfold on and just start throwing darts.
Yes, yeah, so much can change in that time.
It's not even possible to make that projection. So what I'm saying is these actions are irresponsible. They're irresponsible. Exactly. And you're playing with borrowed money. You may win a couple, but you're not going to win a lot. And guess what? Redfish are a lot like striped bass. It takes them a long time. Yeah, the little ones grow fast. But once they hit 3-4 years old, they don't grow so fast anymore. Those things are ancient. So, like, what are we doing? How can these managers look us in the face and say everything's okay when in our heart, we're looking back at them and being like, you're doing the wrong thing because you don't have the gonads to take the heat and do the right thing? And if anyone disagrees, if any managers listen to this, sometimes managers listen to it and they get hot under the collar. That's not true. info@saltwaterguidesassociation.org. I'll get you on a podcast tomorrow. I'll cancel whatever meeting I have and let's have a discussion.
Come on out. It's such a good point, Tony, because unfortunately, though, we're doubling down. So Georgia CRD, Coastal Resource Division, has not made a change. And the last change was a slight slot shift in 2002, I believe. So we've already kicked the can down the road 30 years for the future to deal with. And now we're in the future. Our present day is that future, if you were to go back. So we've already kicked the can 30 years. Now they're still kicking the can down the road, even though we're at 16 to 18% spawning potential ratio. I don't know how much further we can kick the can down the road. And one of the things that we heard in one of the meetings was from Doug Haymans, actually, stating that we had a question, how long would these changes take to rebuild our fishery? And they said about 30 years. But it's important to know, so we're kicking the can down the road another 30 years is what you're saying. Essentially what they said on the record. Unfortunately, that 30-year recovery estimated only brings us to a 30% spawning potential ratio because they lowered the spawning potential ratio with Virginia and the Potomac Rivers boats. They lowered it from 40% to 30%. And that 10% buffer was exactly what's put in place to react to situations like you just mentioned, Tony, a snowfall in Louisiana, a freeze, a pandemic, global pandemic, things that we don't know are going to happen in the future. You need a buffer. The buffer has been removed. So 30% not only means we're overfished, it also means we're healthy. So there's zero buffer. That's, if we kick the can down the road even further, we're going to have to close the fishery. Future generations are going to have to deal with that. And unfortunately, the sad fact is, we almost, because they've been kicking the can for 30 years already, we almost had to deal with that. The only reason we don't have a moratorium or that we're changing to a catch and release fishery only for redfish, which is what no one wants, the only reason they're not making that change is because they lowered spawning potential ratio from 40% to 30%. That single-handedly gave them more room. And it actually gave them authority to say, we don't need to close the fishery anymore because our new target is 10% less.
We pulled in some scientists. to be consultants of ours. Two young men, top of their game. Nicest people. One works in academia. One works at a very prominent lab in the Northeast. One does, all the species in Louisiana that you would imagine. The other focuses on a lot on tuna. And they're helping us pick through the stock assessment, the quantitative science side of the stock assessment, because there's just things, no matter how long you do this, if you're not trained, you don't know. They put the old banana in the tailpipe, and you never know until you get a scientist to listen and say, hey, that's not right, right? Yeah, I saw what you did there. So last night we were on a call catching up on some striper stuff. And a young man from Louisiana said, hey, remind me what they did in Georgia. Or remind me what they did with redfish in the South Atlantic. And when I told him they lowered spawning potential ratio, he fell out of his chair. Even with everything that we went through in Louisiana, they didn't lower that. They didn't change the standard. When you have to take a reduction because overfishing and overfishing is occurring, and your answer is to lower the standard, you have given up on the fishery. You have flushed the fishery down the toilet. And what you are saying to all future redfish anglers in the South Atlantic is, it's never going to be the same. We're never going to have the same amount of big fish to make little fish ever again because we didn't have the courage to do the right thing. And as I say that, I'm going to pull South Carolina out of that statement, because what South Carolina did was say, okay, we lost the vote. Hold my beer. We're still going to keep to the same old standards because a state can always do more conservation. They can always do more. They can't do less. So I don't want somebody from South Carolina DNR listening to this and saying, you know, what about us, Tony? I wanted to clarify that. And we all almost fell out of our chairs. And it was a totally, wholly different experience when we sent our South Carolina guides to the State House. They listened. They knew about the issue in the Senate. I still, to this day, that was the best Senate committee hearing I've ever heard in my life. I remember texting you afterwards, and I was like, I think I was sucked into a black hole. I'm on a different timeline. I've never heard anything like this in my life. And, you know, those are your northern neighbors, Jared. And it's a Republican state. It's not, there's nothing. It is the choice. Oh, and by the way, South Carolina has to go through the legislators. They have a more difficult path than Georgia. I mean, how batshit crazy is that? Georgia has an easier path to get this done.
They can make a change at any time.
It is not a partisan issue. It is not, you know, good versus bad. It is a state agency that is obstructing conservation because their leadership doesn't have the guts to do the right thing.
Summed it up. No disagreement there. I could say that confidently after 6 years of being in this battle. That's exactly right. And we've met with the legislators. Benny Blanco has come up from Captains for Clean Water to our meetings to understand further. This is early on. And he spoke with one of our legislators. And still to this day, this is one of the main legislators that is against and opposed to any change whatsoever. And when other regulations were being proposed and when it was going to be put towards a vote at the DNR board meeting, we would have had changes back in 2022. He's the one that led the charge on sharing a letter with five other legislators stating exactly what you mentioned at the beginning of our podcast, threatening the DNR. Yes. I mean, it's absolutely absurd that we're at this point, and I think our neighboring states should be livid. They should be, talking to Georgia saying, what are you doing? We're making all the proper changes in South Carolina. Florida Senate, we've been making changes all along leading up to this. You know, they're at one fish per person per day, both of our neighboring states, and we're sitting here proposing 5 fish to 3 fish and maybe moving the slot 1 inch. I mean, they should be livid. And as should our recreational anglers and our captains of this bare minimum that's being proposed. And so right now, until June 30th, you have a chance to share your voice and knowing the facts. Go to georgiasaltwater.org, click Get Involved. That page has listed everything that we've learned in the past 6 years. It gives you bullet points and talking points. It gives you a list of all the Georgia legislators and representatives in each county that you can reach out to. We have until June 30th. We have 5 days left, less than 5 days if you're listening to this a couple days from now. You have to share your voice. And it doesn't matter what state you're from. Everyone, share your voice. Another way for you to go is 100miles.org, spelled out, 100miles.org. And if you click Take Action on their website, and I'm sure we'll put this in the show notes, they have form letters. If you don't know what to say, they have form letters. You can go click through. You can put your name, enter your information, and slightly adjust pre-written letters to help support stronger regulation changes. I'm 45 right now, and the current regulation changes being proposed will not bring our fishery back to 30% SPR, spawning potential ratio, for 30 years. I'll be 75 years old when we've recovered to the level that currently states you're overfished, but we're also healthy. That's not even talking about
recovering. I'll be in my mid-80s.
Yeah, that's not even talking about recovering to 40% spawning potential ratio where we have a buffer. So I want to see that in my lifetime. I want to see the recovery of this fishery in my lifetime. We need to have more drastic regulation changes so we can make this timeline shorter so that we can recover in each of our lifetimes so that not only we can enjoy it in our lifetime, we could pass it on to future generations to enjoy.
So, Jared, the people listening to this are going to go to like the Georgia. If you just put in like Georgia redfish regulation changes, Georgia also DNR has a page that you can web page. We'll have something up on our webpage here shortly as well. But one of the things that people are going to look at and be like, what the hell? There's only one option listed. There's not multiple options. So it's like, I mean, like, what do you do? You just send a letter in and say, yes, I support this. You'll see the nuances on the various pages. Like, you know, it's a good time to go on public record and say there shouldn't be a captain's limit. And we should be doing more like South Carolina is. But since this is the only option, we support, you know, whatever reduction y'all are willing to do. Like, you need to do something, but this isn't enough. And I think that's kind of the message that we'll send out. And I would be remiss not to point out that my consultant text chain is going ballistic right now because Blaine took his son out fishing last night and caught some dinosaur level redfish. I mean, the pictures that I'm seeing are unbelievable. And our Louisiana guys are commenting like, holy moly, like ours don't get that big. These are 60 pound redfish that Blaine got last night. Okay. They are giants. And I'm like, yeah, Blaine was live lining Louisiana redfish to get our redfish to eat. And Blaine was somewhere, I'll just say, in Virginia. His son's sitting there next to him, and it looks like the redfish could eat Blaine's son. I mean, that's how big. These things are dinosaurs that that's they're awesome. Catching. And awesome. And you see the smile on the kid's face, and you're like, you're going to deny a kid that? Exactly. Like, that should be our whole statement. He's Blaine's son, so, like, of course he's going to love fishing. But he's going to remember that for the rest of his life. When he's 50, he's going to have those pictures on his desk and people are going to be like, redfish get that big? And that's not fair, man. That's not fair to the next generation. We got a bunch of goofy people and we're always making fun of each other at the Guides Association. And like, you know, the guys from Louisiana are shocked at these the quality of these redfish that we can catch here. And it's because the SPR was at 40% and we haven't been able to kill a big redfish on the East Coast for decades. Right. And that's the quality. Don't you want that? Can't we have one quality fishery? Just one.
I know.
Or we just got to mess everything up.
One is, I mean, by the way, redfish are the state game fish for the state of Georgia. You would think they would care about this species a little bit more than the regulations they're proposing now. So it bolsters economies. I mean, it lifts up economies. You have tackle shops, you have fly shops.
But what, 80% of your fly shop, Jared? 80% of your fly shop? I said 80% of your fly shops probably redfish.
Oh, if not 90. People are traveling from all over the world to fish this fishery for redfish. And if we're not taking care of our business partners, that's what a lot of our captains call them. If you're not taking care of our business partners, the redfish, how are you making this sustainable for everybody for the future? You're not. Certainly not for other species as well. 15 fish per day and 25 fish per day. So we need to make some drastic changes. We need everyone's voice to be heard. Tony's absolutely right. Go to Georgia DNR's website as well, and you can see Redfish Regulations 2026. You'll see a landing page there. It gives you instructions on who to email at DNR Coastal Resource Division. That's probably the most important call to action. Secondary call to actions would be 100miles.org. Click Take Action, and there's a form letter there. If you're not good with words, you can revise and use pre-written letters that we've provided to you. And then you have georgiasaltwater.org, which is our organization. If you click Take Action there or get involved, you'll see the history of the past 6 years of meetings. You'll see data points there to help give you some talking points to reach out to legislators. And we have a full list of the Georgia representatives there. So if you want to email them directly and individually before June 30th, let's flood the emails. If you are upset about this as we are, and you want more drastic regulation changes and you don't want this redfish fishery to close to catch and release only, then you need to tell DNR. You need to tell Georgia DNR that we're not happy with the regulations that you're proposing. They give us five options, none of which showed any regard with making this recover within our lifetime. None of them. All five were loose. And changing from five fish to three fish and moving 1 inch in your slot is absurd at this point. After 6 years of what I've witnessed, the meetings I've attended, the ASMFC stock assessment results, which I got a knot in my stomach. My heart jumped into my throat when I said we're overfished and we're still overfishing. And we're not seeing the appropriate reaction from Georgia DNR Coastal Resource Division. So you haven't. And a couple days left till June 30th, please spend two minutes of your life, draft a quick message, a quick note in your own words, and let them know that this is not okay.
Well, Jared, I appreciate you being on here one more time. The deadline is June 30th. We'll have some information on our website. Any comments that you can send in will be appreciated. There is only one option. You know, educate yourself on this. Let's get this moving in the right direction. And, you know, unfortunately, not only do we have to keep advocating for redfish in the South, well, in Georgia specifically now, a little bit of reduction is okay, but this ain't over. It's never over. Something's going to happen. We're going to be right back at it. And don't be a statistic of another person who doesn't trust the process anymore. Like, we have to overwhelm the process. That's the only way it's ever going to change. Mm-hmm. Nobody's been watching these people for decades. They do whatever the heck they want. They don't listen. I'm sure this rings true for a lot of my people in the Mid-Atlantic and the Northeast. They don't listen to what we have to say. They're asking you to trust science that has made a ton of assumptions. They're not risk averse at all. They pull these timelines out for decades where there's no hope in seeing the old fishery in our lifetimes, and we just can't accept it. that can't be the norm. We have to push back. And if you don't think you're going to make a difference, do it anyway for your kids and grandkids. You know, be that person that plants trees whose shade they'll never enjoy. And that's what this is about. Being fair to the next generation and leaving something for them to fall in love with the way that we fell in love with it. So June 30th, go to 100 Mile, go to GSSA.org, take a look at the history. If you're lazy, send the form letter in. At least it's something. If you want to get a little more fancy, type up your own letter. But as a conservation community on two coasts, we all have to stand together and push back against this stuff. And that's the only way it's going to stop happening. So, Jared, thank you. And Jared, if anyone's ever in Brunswick, Georgia, what's the name of the shop? Tell them to go by, get the best flies, best gear, best advice to visit Georgia and experience your incredible fishery.
Yeah, please come out and see us. If you're on the 100 miles of Georgia coast, we are On the Fly Outfitters in Brunswick, Georgia. We're an hour south of Savannah, hour north of Jacksonville, Florida. You want to talk fishing, redfish, conservation. We're all passionate anglers. We have free events every single week throughout the year. So if you have fly tying nights to attend, casting clinics, we're constantly educating others and we're spreading the word to grow our community. Of April 23rd through 25th next year will be our third annual Golden Isles Fly Fishing Festival. We closed down two city streets this year. We're closing down three city streets next year. We had over 30 skiffs in our skiff show, our boat show, and we plan on having way more this year. And so it's a great time to just gather with like-minded anglers, conventional or fly, and hang out. We have in multiple after parties. We have educational seminars. We have the largest skiff show in the Southeast.
And if you've never experienced Georgia's fishery, that's a heck of a weekend to do it because you got everyone in the same place. You got an incredible amount of knowledge, super friendly learning environment. And if you've never been to the Georgia coast, that's a heck of a weekend to go and visit and just kind of immerse yourself and just cut that learning curve in half and really see everything that Georgia has to offer, because it is beautiful. It does have a lot of fish. It's a different kind of fishery than almost anywhere else with those tides. And so, Jared, thanks. I appreciate you hopping on. And this is only the beginning.
That's what Benny and Chris Wenham and Benny Blanco told me 6 years ago. It said, strap in. It's going to be a long road, but just don't let your foot off the pedal.
Yeah.
And that's our goal, is to, you know, educate and inform and empower the public to, we'll cut through the noise and we'll show things to you in layman's terms so that you're empowered to use your voice, because that's the only way we'll make change. Now go do it. You have 2 minutes. June 30th is the deadline. Send a quick email. Go visit the landing pages in the show notes. We need everyone to send an email before June 30th. No matter what state you're from, send an email, let your voice be heard. We appreciate y'all. Thanks for having us.